तुम्हारे बिना नहीं रह पाऊंगा, तुम्हें पता है।
कब तक तुम्हारे पीछे पीछे भागती रहूं नीरेन?
अरे मैं भी तो आया था लंदन तुम्हारे लिए।
नीरेन, तुम मेरे लिए लंदन नहीं आए थे, तुम आयशा के लिए लंदन आए थे। और अगर आए भी थे तो क्या बड़ी बात कर ली तुमने? जता क्या रहे हो? अपनी फैमिली के लिए आए थे, इतना क्या महान हो गया? अगर इतना भी नहीं कर सकते तो शादी नहीं करनी चाहिए थी। किसी के लिए कुछ नहीं करना पड़ता तुमको।
हुआ क्या है तुमको? कहां की बात कहां ले जा रही हो तुम? वहां बाहर हम बैठे डिनर ऑर्डर कर रहे हो
तुम। अरे तो जाओ ना यार, खाना खाओ अपना, ठंडा हो रहा तुम्हारा खाना। कभी कभी तो मुझे पता ही नहीं कि मैं किससे बात कर रही हूं, मैं तुम्हें जानती भी हूं या नहीं। पिछले 20 साल में क्या किया है मैंने? हाँ, रोज आयशा की देखभाल 24/7। और अब जब मैं 50 साल की हो गई तो क्या बचा है मेरे पास? वो तो चली गई और ईशान अपनी जिंदगी में बिजी है जैसे उसको होना चाहिए, पर तुम सब बिजी हो।
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Retro Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to tell a dying girl that loves him that he just wants to be friends, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
That's mean.
I'm sorry. When that happened in the movie, I'm like, bro, are you serious? Are you really doing this right now?
It's tough. It was a tough moment for sure.
Yeah. I don't think you'd actually do that, Perk.
Probably not. But I don't know. It also doesn't sound like an amazing situation to be in for either party, really.
Yeah, so. That is fair. Well, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie that was connected to the last one loosely.
somewhat.
We try our best here. We post every Friday on podcast services and now YouTube, so go check that out. Tell your friends about it and come watch some movies with us. Last week we watched Roadhouse, all right, which was a great time, but now we're back and doing our Asian movie strings, and we're doing India next for our country of origin that we want to watch the movies from. And our connection was we previously on the podcast we watched a movie called 310 to Yuma, which wasn't that bad. Then we got Ben Foster, who was in a movie called The Mechanic. What was it, The Machinist?
No, it's The Mechanic.
It is The Mechanic. The Machinist is a different movie.
Yes, it is.
It was in The Mechanic. Also in The Mechanic, Chad Stahelski. Chad Stahelski was also in Matrix 4, which also featured Priyanka Chopra Jonas, who starred in this movie, The Sky is Pink. And that's how we do it. Perk, why don't you intro for us?
Yeah, all right. I'm going to do my best with pronunciation, so I apologize in advance. Mm-hmm. The Sky is Pink is a Shanali Bose joint from 2019, starring Priyanka Chopra Jonas, the aforementioned, Farhan Akhtar, Zaira Wasim, and Rohit Saraf. Mm-hmm. And it follows the life and true story of... kind of almost as like a second, like a B plot of Aisha Chowdhury, a motivational speaker who passed away of pulmonary fibrosis. But it's the movie. Actually, I didn't know because I didn't know too much about it. But it's more of using her lens to cover her parents' relationship and her family's relationship. A couple of fun facts for you. This filming ended on this movie 4 days before Priyanka Chopra and Nick Jonas's wedding.
Crazy. I saw she was like doing tastings for the wedding, like in between scenes, which is like, that's gotta be major whiplash.
They had a separate set aside room at the production for tastings and stuff like that. At one point,
wild.
She had to fly immediately from set. She had to fly to Paris to get fitted for a dress and then immediately fly back. 17-hour flight both ways.
My God.
Yep, insane. And then another fun fact is that Ishan Chowdhury, Aisha's older brother, is half of an electronic music duo who I am a big, big fan of called Memba. Mm. And they produced the... The end of the movie track,
the credits track. The credits song.
They produced the song that plays in the credits. He wrote it for his deceased sister, and I think it's a really beautiful song and a great way to end the movie.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because you had mentioned to me previously, like last week, that a song that you liked was the movie. Like, and I was waiting, like, when's an electronic song gonna kind of come in? But I like how they used it at the end there.
To jump in before I forget, though. There is a so I think that the original music for this soundtrack is pretty good. Mm-hmm. But there is one specific. It's more of a score component, but it's almost like a melodic humming over like a really airy kind of. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but you'd know it if I played it. I really love that. Mm. Out of nowhere, I was just like, "Oh my god! This little melody they have. It feels like it's coming from a cloud." Sorry, yeah, I had to rant for a second there. About
I really like the music in this movie. Yeah. Do you want to go first? What did you think of The Sky Is Pink?
I did not keep it together.
You can do it.
I was a mess for about the entire last hour of the movie. Mm-hmm. So much so that my dog actually came up and to check on me to make sure I was all right. But mm-hmm. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a very interesting story about someone that we don't really know about, who's has a very interesting story that I'm glad was put to film.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of surprised we didn't hear about Aisha when we were in school. Cause I mean, she would have been around our age. And if she was doing like TED Talks and stuff, I'm surprised we didn't like hear about her. But, right. Yeah, no, like this was a hard watch, man. This like this stamina wise. Cause it's, you know, it's like 2.5 hours and it's not like a fun time for most of it. And yeah, I agree. I didn't fully lose it, but I was crying multiple times because there's some really hard scenes to watch. Like you said in your intro, like this movie is actually kind of more about the parents, and I thought their relationship was the most interesting like thing. Like I really, really enjoy their relationship, and we see kind of all facets of it. Like we don't normally get to see that in movies. Like I feel like there's not a lot of movies that kind of focus on parents and everything about their relationship, you know, like, and I guess you kind of only really do that in a movie this long. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to know how to like review this movie. Cause it's like, I don't want to like review her life because it was real. Like I can't be like, oh, the plot sucks. Like, well, yeah, this actually happens. There's only so much you can do there, but like as a movie, I just keep going back to the parents' relationship. I think that was super well done and incredibly engaging.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in the same boat as you. I have problems with like the movie from a movie structural point. Mm-hmm. I think I use this analogy all the time, but I think that this movie has an amazing backbone in its characters, and its familial interactions. And then it does some weird stuff on the periphery. Mm-hmm. For a couple examples, I think the narration is okay, but it's fairly inconsistent. So sometimes when you get a little narration, it's like, oh, that's right, there's a narrator.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it works in the sense that it's, you know, it's posthumous. So if anyone's going to be a narrator, I understand that. It's just it sometimes sticks out where I'm like, oh, that's right, there's a narrator. And then the non-chronological time jumps I thought were also maybe not needed.
Yeah.
Like when they jump to 2015 and then jump back to the 80s. And I think you could maybe do a jump back to the 80s, but they maybe just did it a little too often.
Yeah, I agree. I think starting the movie with them in the present day worked because we already know that she's passed. And then going back to the beginning, if they had gone to me and then just gone straight through after that, I think it would have been fine with like a flashback here and there for like the parents' relationship when they met, you know. But yeah, going to the present day multiple times got a little bit jarring. I agree with that. And yeah, the narration I think is I like the idea of it, and I think she's a fun narrator. Yeah, but I agree it's a bit inconsistent.
It's fun and it adds some levity. But yeah, it kind of sticks out occasionally.
Yeah.
But to piggyback off what we were talking about with the parents' relationship being really well fleshed out, I think the acting in this movie is terrific.
Yeah.
I think there is one weak link that stuck out, and I don't really know what happened, but when the husband is going in for bone marrow surgery, the guy who holds Priyanka Chopra back from the door is just, he's really bad.
Yeah.
He's really bad at his one line. But other than that, I mean, Priyanka Chopra is great. Farhan Akhtar is also great. They have fantastic chemistry.
Yeah.
I'm sold the whole time on them. Yeah. I'm going to grab the names. Zaira Wasim, who plays Aisha, is fantastic. And I think especially towards the end, she has some really powerhouse scenes.
The phone call with her brother.
The phone call with her brother. Yep. Yeah. And I think both actors in that scene, like, I got goosebumps right now. Yeah. But Rohit Saraf are also, who plays Ishan. I think that the main four family, the actors all really knocked it out of the park. I was like gripped the whole time. They were doing such a good job.
And also shout out to Priyanka and Farhan for playing different ages of themselves, those characters throughout the movie. I think they all worked. Like, I like them playing, like, them first meeting and being young, and he has like the goofy hair, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then like the older versions. Yeah, it felt very authentic. Speaking of the aging though, I did find it a bit interesting how they structure the movie in that, like, we get like baby Aisha for like the first hour, and then we skip to her being like 13 for a little bit, and then we skip to her being 18.
Yeah, we're only at 13 for what it feels like maybe 20 minutes. Yeah. And then we skip to 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if maybe that the 13 scene or the 13 stretch could just be done away with.
Yeah. Or and also just like less of her being a baby. I'm like, I don't know. It's like, so like this baby ain't growing. This baby's been a baby forever. You know, it's
like that's where it sticks out that this movie, really the central plot line is the parents' relationship.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Because there's a lot of development in that, in that portion, developing their relationship. And yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's a very long movie. I don't think so. I was planning to stop watching with like an hour left and go to bed, but I couldn't because I really was pretty enthralled. But you're right. It does. It's odd how the weight of the movie is distributed, with almost the little interlude where she's, you know, an early teenager. I mean, there are some plot developments there, and
she meets Karan and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it builds a little bit, but I think it maybe could have been cleaned up a little bit with that section.
And it's mostly fine. It's just the pacing. Not so the pacing of the story, but just the pacing of her ages, I think, could have been a little more consistent with, like, the most time being when she's, you know, 18, 17, 18. But I think my favorite scene in the movie is the conversation in the bathroom that the parents have at the restaurant after their, like, friend or whatever says, like, oh, yeah, we just lost someone, too. We know how you're feeling. Our 73-year-old, like...
Only 73.
Yeah, like, that... Just like Jesus fucking Christ, and her going to the bathroom and him going to check on her, and her being like, all I've done my entire life, it feels like, is take care of Aisha. Now she's gone, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need to run away because I can't deal with the, like, that was just
immaculate. It's no, you're right. That scene when he says, you know, well, you weren't there for me either, and she's like, I wasn't. I don't know how to be there for anyone other than Aisha, which is a really powerful line. And I'm sure feels very personal to a lot of people in similar situations where now that time has passed, like, what do you do? What do you do with yourself? And I really liked how they clearly had conflicting ways of processing grief. And instead of either of them forcing them to cope their way, they give it some time. They allow each other to cope in their own processes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the relationship isn't like a typical, like, rom-com where they meet, it's great, there's one issue, and then they fix it, and everything's fine afterwards. Like, we get multiple times when they're in conflict, but they always kind of get through it. And I think that's just really beautiful to see, like, the whole lung transplant thing, right? Where he's like, you know, I'm not going to budge on this. Then she calls out their younger daughter, and, like, that's super brutal about how he, you know, the guilty feels. And, like, it's, it's really powerful. And, yeah, just as a story of parents, like, there's not much better, I think, than this film.
And I really like how we don't beat around the bush with, like, parents meeting meet cute, you know?
Yeah.
Once the earliest we go back to in the 80s, they're already madly in love, you know? Mm-hmm. So we don't have to spend time beating around the bush, like, getting to know you and all that stuff. We start with them at the status quo, and then they kind of, you know, throughout the movie, they have their ups and downs. And I think that's an interesting way to frame a relationship.
Mm-hmm. And we also don't beat around the bush with, like, the first line is like, oh, you're talking about parents' sex life. And then, like, abortion's like a main topic, like, immediately. It's like, okay, yeah, we're going into this. And, like, I appreciate there's, like, we're going to talk about it because this is the stuff that people had to deal with. And, you know, I appreciated how, I don't know what the word is, courageous, I guess they were, or just like, we're not going to like sugarcoat this. Like, we're going to tell you how it is and how people have to deal with. And it was nice.
Definitely. I very much agree. It's very on the nose. You know, they don't pull many punches throughout the entire film, really, especially towards the end. I mean, it felt like gut punch after gut punch.
Well, even before the end, I mean, it totally makes sense, and I assume it actually happened, but the whole psychotic break thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, holy shit, like.
Well, that was in the last hour of the movie. So
I guess, okay, yeah.
Lot be known, I was crying my eyes out.
Like, that was so brutal, man. And it's like, I'm like, they don't need this right now. There's already enough going on. And it's just, that really got me. I was like, and like, it makes sense. She's not sleeping, and like those I think can happen. It's just like, man, it's brutal. I'm more on, like, the comedy note. One thing that I thought was funny and also, like, possibly a little creepy was just how much, even like, before she got, like, the fatal diagnosis of, like, the pulmonary fibrosis, but, like, her trying to, like, manipulate Karan into, like, dating her, and, like, her just, like, all the manipulation she's doing, and her brother kind of giving her shit for it, but, like,
yeah.
It was a lot, and I wrote my notes like, "Mom, you got to calm down. Like, you are trying to do too much right now." But I guess it kind of adds later to how she feels after.
It is funny because you're right. There's a switch flip after they get the all clear from the SCID.
Yep.
Where she's like, "Oh my God, my daughter hasn't lived. Like, I've sheltered her from everything. Now we got to make her super live." And when they get the terminal diagnosis of around 5 years, it's like, okay, now we really got to super live, and playing matchmaker. I thought that was funny. I think there's definitely, there's a good amount of levity, good moments of humor that don't undercut, you know? And, I think a lot of that too is, Aisha's attitude.
Yeah.
And you know, how nonchalant she is about death and everything. And
well, and that's why that phone call with her brother hit so hard.
Yeah,
you know,
because it's like, you see through the cracks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's brutal.
I was bawling at that scene, of course.
Yeah,
obviously,
definitely, I was too. It's a little bit off topic, but I was surprised she had to get chemo. Do you know why? Like, is it because she had to get a stem cell transplant as well, or like, I was surprised. Like, oh, she had to go for chemotherapy. I'm like, what, why?
Yeah, I don't really know all the process. I'm not familiar with that disease, but I would imagine it has something to do with not rejecting the bone marrow, maybe.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Which is like, it's just brutal because, like,
oh,
she's doing this thing to, like, solve the SICD, like, great, but then she has to take chemo, and that's what ends up killing her. It's like, it wasn't even the SICD. And it's just like, it's just really
sad. It's insult to injury. It's kicking someone when they're down. No, I remember because at the end of the movie, there's the line about, if they had a match, she wouldn't have needed chemo. So I would imagine that the chemo is to stop her body from rejecting bone marrow.
Yep. That's good. Yeah.
Okay. If there was an actual match, like, Ishan wasn't a match, but if there were a match, they wouldn't have had to do the chemo, and she would still be with us.
Yeah. It's, yeah,
another thing they gloss over in the movie, she released her book, My Little Epiphanies. It published the day after she died.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm going to go buy that book. I'm very mm-hmm. interested, especially what they showed. They showed some of the clips from her TED Talks at the end of the movie. And just some of the stuff she was saying are just like small and profound. And,
yeah,
definitely. Just good little nuggets. So I'm curious. I want to read that book.
Yeah, definitely. I know we're kind of wind down, but you just made me think of a couple scenes that I enjoyed. On the comedy front, the whole Ishan not being his son thing was really funny. Of him kind of freaking out and then him saying sorry, which was a nice callback at the end too. That was a great bit. And then I thought the radio show being the way to deliver the exposition, but also really took your heartstrings like pretty quick in the movie was like so smart by the film team, and also destroyed me. Like that scene wrecked me. And just seeing like the donations, everything. Yeah, it was all really beautiful. So yeah, I would definitely recommend this movie.
In summary, I think it's a flawed work, but at its heart, it's really beautiful.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have any recommendations based on this one?
Yeah, so the only one I could think of was Our Friend, it's similar, but it's different. I mean, it's another movie that walks you through the stages of the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, I got emotional during Our Friend, but I got far more emotional in this movie. And I think part of that is due to the separation. That the sky is pink. I don't have previous, you know, like mental relationships with any of the actors.
Mm.
Where at the end of the day, no matter how good the performances are, it's Casey Affleck and Jason Segel.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, I've never seen any of these characters, so it hits so much harder. They feel so real.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I want to see a video essay about that. About how familiarity with an actor can affect your viewing experience. That's like, because to me, I feel like I can't watch Ben Affleck or Matt Damon movies anymore. Like, we talked about on the podcast a few times, but that The Last Duel that came out.
Yeah.
Like that, I'm like, you can't put Ben Affleck in a bad wig and expect me to believe he's like this medieval king. Like, I can't, you know? So I just, I don't know. I'm very curious about like the psychology of that and how if a lot of people deal with that kind of thing. But, yeah, Our Friend, I think, is a great film, and you can go back to the review if you want. But yeah, similar things, but in that case, it's the parent that's dealing with it as opposed to the child, and a little bit different perspective there. But all right, well, that is our review of The Sky is Pink. Stay tuned until the end of the podcast. We talk about watching next week. But before that, we got a bunch of reviews, and I think it's just one for me this week, right?
Yeah, I've been wasting time playing video games. So no movies for me.
No worries. Okay, so and that's good because I have a lot to talk about here. So I went and saw Guardians 3 last Friday. And since I've seen it, I've not been able to stop thinking about it and the fact that I don't know how I'm going to review this movie. And here's the reason. I'm going to stress this. I believe this completely. More than any other Marvel movie, and I'm including the Avengers movies, more than any other Marvel movie, this movie does not stand on its own.
Oh, really?
You need to care about these characters before you go in, feel like, in order for the movie to work. And I don't know if that disqualifies it from being a good movie. Because, I think reviewing this as a Marvel movie and reviewing this as a movie are two very different things. And I don't really know what the best approach is. And I guess you could just do both. But, you know, I guess for this podcast, we kind of just... We don't really do big franchises or of a series. We did like Terminator 1 too, but I think like as a movie, I just don't know how much it works. Cause like I cried a lot. I cried a lot in this movie, and I don't know if it's because I care about these characters or because they show me a lot of fucked up shit that people went through. And if you put anybody in those situations, I would cry. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't necessarily unique to those characters. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but like I don't know how much you know about the plot of the movie. It's kind of about Rocket's.
Not too much. I know that Rocket's a lot of it is Rocket's backstory, yeah.
Yeah. And so hopefully I can say this without, because spoiler. I think the things we learn about him in this movie add context to the previous movies and his character in the previous movies. But we don't get a lot of Rocket in this film that has learned from, I mean, not learned, but like kind of grown from his past. If that makes it, so let me give an example. I feel like in anime a lot, right? I'm an anime guy. And you know this, Perk.
I do.
You get a big fight scene. The protagonist is losing. Then he has a flashback. And then he learns a thing and he overcomes. You know what I mean?
Pulls strength from within.
He pulls through and he unlocks a new technique or something. And, you know, and it's very satisfying, right? I feel like in this movie, you get the flashback. You don't get the post-flashback Rocket being new and different or, you know, learn something that he gained or something from processing this trauma, right? I think it's odd. And there are a lot of character arcs in this movie. They try to, like, every character has their own little thing. And I just feel like most of them, you need to have previous investment for it to do anything for you. There's not really anything, like, self-contained in this movie. And maybe that's okay because it's a Marvel franchise and everyone's going to see it has seen the previous movies. Like, no one's really walking into Guardians 3, I think, alone. I mean, people did that for Endgame and Infinity War, and I think those movies are better at, like, establishing the context within the movie. I don't think Guardians 3 does a good job of establishing a ton of context, except for Rocket, kind of. But, like, I'm sure this is no surprise. Like, this movie is, like, Quill being, like, sad about Gamora. And, like, they talk about why, like, what happened, but, like, it really doesn't hit unless you've seen Endgame, you know?
Yeah.
If
you don't mind me jumping in.
Please.
I've had my perspective switched on this because I thought about it. not that I was swayed. I thought about it a little bit. I don't think you can divorce Marvel movies from the context.
Mm.
I don't think it's fair to say a Marvel movie doesn't stand on its own because I don't think it should have to in this scenario. You know,
because like the audience is going to have the context.
Yeah,
the
audience should have that context. Obviously, not everyone is going to have seen them, but why would you go to the theater to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 having not seen the first two? Right. You're setting yourself up for failure. And yeah, I would say in big franchises, like, you can't say that The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, isn't good because they don't introduce all the characters. You know, it's a carry-on. It's a Odyssey through the world over three movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a movie necessarily has to stand on its own. I prefer it when they do, but also in an example like the Mario movie, I'm very glad that my hand wasn't held the whole time. Because if you want to make that more appealing to every audience, you have to explain everything.
Yeah.
And if you explain everything, the movie gets twice as long and super boring. So long story short, I don't think you need to deprive a movie of outside context.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, and I think I agree with that. Like you said, because a lot of people went to Infinity War, and that was their first Marvel movie, right? Because it was such a big event.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like I said, I think that movie did a good job of establishing enough context to have a good time, even if you've never seen Marvel before. Guardians 3, some people only watch Guardians, right? That's like their favorite thing, and they only watch those. But I think I agree with you that the vast majority of people going to see this movie have the context. So that being said, I think this movie accomplished what it wanted to accomplish. And I think that's a compliment that I would like to give to most movies, right? I don't think it always happens, but James Gunn, I think, did what he wanted to do, and I cried a lot. However, like, this movie also doesn't really feel like a Guardians movie. Like, when you think of Guardians, I feel like most people think of, like, fun and music and, like, ensemble cast kind of hijinks and stuff, right? This movie is just, like, very dramatic and very fucked up and very sad. And when Gunn tries to throw in jokes, it feels like emotional whiplash. One of the guys I saw it with was like, yeah, it's weird. Like, you're in this, you watch this flashback that's insanely fucked, and then all of a sudden you're dancing to, like, a 90s song, and you're just like, I don't know how to feel about this right now, you know? And I think Gunn is this is not like a new criticism. I think he tries to put in too many jokes a lot of the times, and his hit rate is not 100%, you know. I think he did try to force in a little bit too many, especially for like the heavy subject matter that this movie is dealing with. And there was actually one joke that actually pissed me off that he kept it in the movie, because I think it really undercut a character. I was like, why? Like, that was not funny enough for what you just did. Like, that was not worth the payoff there. So I wish you would have pulled back a little bit on the comedy, but also it's like, how can you do that when a Guardians movie, people are expecting to laugh and all this. So it's tricky. Like, adding in the context, people are expecting a certain thing from a Guardians movie, and this movie was not that, you know. So it's in this really weird spot. But overall, I'm glad I watched it. I'm never going to watch it again because of there's some scenes I just don't want to see again that are very hard to watch. And it's just not as like fun or rewatchable as other Guardians movies. So yeah, it's a weird one. it's a weird one. And I'd be interested if you go and see it, what do you think of it? But like I said, I think Gunn achieved what he wanted to, which is probably the best compliment I can give it. And he got me balling. So
fair enough.
There you go. But yeah, I'll be curious. I mean, I think reviews are kind of mixed on it. So I'll be curious to see like long term where people kind of put it on the general kind of Marvel rankings. But it seems like, I mean, lately things have been a bit lower for Marvel. So I'm curious if it'll come back up. But we shall see.
So we shall.
All right, well, that is our show for this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, okay, loose connection. All right, I'm sorry, but here's the thing. Perk and I both watch RRR on our own, right? We didn't officially review it on the pod, and I wish we did, because that movie's fantastic. But because we've both seen it, we're going to use a connection from RRR, which is the director S.S. Rajamouli, I believe is how you pronounce it. And we're going to watch one of his movies, Bahubali The Beginning. This is one of the highest grossing movies in India of all time. It is of the same ilk as RRR, and I'm very excited to watch it and have a good time. It's streaming on Netflix, so make sure you check that out. Bahubali The Beginning on Netflix for next week. But until then, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.